state revenues, just to see the stability and the flow of funds. I'm sure that you're all aware that since you left here in May, oil prices tanked, and you came back to a $1.1 billion fiscal gap, which is roughly 50% of the budget. That's not a pleasant surprise, I'm sure. And as I said in the Senate committee, but if Rip Van Legislator had started his 20-year sleep in 1979, he might be trying to convince you how fortunate you are to be discussing oil prices, or to be concerned about oil prices, because at that time, they expected the permanent fund earnings to be the primary source of state revenues, not because of price declines in oil, but because production declines would virtually eliminate oil revenues. And that's certainly the way the state GO debt was structured. General obligation bonds will be paid off next year. But back to the present fiscal gap, it's just much bigger than anticipated, and it's so big that you can't reasonably expect to fill it with expenditure cuts alone. And that's why the focus of the Senate Finance Committee was on revenue rather than expenditures at this moment. And in fact, expenditures haven't changed a lot since you left in May, the anticipated expenditures. But clearly the fiscal gap grows wider and wider with each passing day of low oil prices. So the committee asked us to look at a history of state revenues, and we put together a lot of information. Virtually everyone at Legislative Finance was involved in gathering data. Ginger coordinated that effort, and we'll present what we came up with. I'll turn it over to Ginger.
Okay. Which one of you have this handout? And on the first page, what you'll see is purple part of the graph, and this is red and purple. This red portion is the oil-related revenues that come into the state. That includes severance tax, includes property tax, rents and royalties. That's the whole thing. It's not just the price per barrel that affects this revenue stream. This blue color is all of our non-oil revenues. So those are going to be other kinds of taxes, anything non-oil related, if that's what comes in the bottom. What you can see mostly along the bottom is that this is a fairly consistent line here. The few small peaks in here had to do with some large interest earnings, and this was a settlement right in here. These were all pre-FY90. After 90, settlement earnings go into the CBR, so you'll see that that line does flatten out. The most important thing to notice here is that oil is very volatile. So it's going to be.
Fall on any of those peaks.
Yeah. The nice high peak here is when Prudhoe Bay basically opened up in 81, 82. We're also blessed with very high price per barrel. It was $34.92 a barrel here. And we were also producing 2 million barrels per day. This peak here was the Gulf War, and unexpectedly we got a nice increase. It went from about $19 a barrel to about $21 a barrel. And this peak here was in 97, and that was just an unexpected price increase again. This big dip here was the 96 price crash. And just to put it in perspective, in 86.
That's when the chairman was elected.
In 86, the price crashed from $24.64 a barrel to $22.03. So you can see with a high level of production, a $2 price difference made an enormous difference. Where when we're down here now, with a $5 and $6 price crash, it's much less volatile. It has to do with the production. The one thing that it also shows us is that we are sort of declining in our oil revenues. Even when we have very strong and very good years, it still is a downward trend here. A couple of good points are that when we've had money in here, people start talking about the rainy day fund. It wasn't a statutorily designated fund, but the rainy day fund. In the price crash, we actually made the statutory budget reserve. When the money was coming in good again, we created, in 1990, the CDR was created. And each time we've created these savings accounts, we have filled in these gaps with our savings accounts. And out here, we are now starting to spend the constitutional budget reserve again. And who knows, we always hope we see another spike come up.
Can I ask a couple quick questions on that?
Sure.
The category of all other revenues. And the expenditure, we're taking the formalism here that the permanent fund revenues are not considered.
This is all just general fund revenues. So permanent fund is not included in this.
And the CBR, when we got tax settlements, we said there was a change there. So a tax settlement that went into the CBR was not treated as a revenue?
It is not shown in the general fund revenue.
And CBR interest, is that shown as a revenue?
That is not shown on this graph because it's in a separate account. So CBR is a separate account. Permanent fund is a separate account. Any other revenues are not shown.
So there are some significant revenues that we also have. That we, if we wanted the whole picture, we'd need to look at some other graphs. Okay.
The second graph is just to give you kind of an idea that this is where the red line is Department of Revenue's forecast, and this blue line is where the actual price came in at for the year, and these are annual projections. It's based on the spring forecast of each year. And the bottom line is that Department of Revenue does come in very close to what actually is collected. So the earnings and the forecast are pretty close. Over a period of time, Department of Revenue has underestimated the amount of our revenues by 82 cents a barrel. So we get a lot of questions on should we use Cambridge Energy Research numbers, should we use Bloomberg's numbers, should we use Department of Revenue's numbers. They are fairly close, and I think the last couple of years at least, we've based our projections on the last few years out here, you'll see just the red, and this is the price per barrel of oil that the governor has projected for the next few years. And these are the numbers that are shown in his interactive model that a lot of people see on the internet. This slide basically gives you an idea of the impact of production, and kind of takes away a little bit of the focus on just the price per barrel. This is based on 1.177 million barrels a day, which is what we're producing now. At $10 a barrel, we're just over the $1 billion mark. At $15 a barrel, and at $20 a barrel. And this is for the year 2000. As you move out to the year 2020, as oil fields produce less or just either stop producing at all, you'll notice that the distance between the lines narrows. And so where maybe a $1 a barrel difference here would make quite a bit of difference, $1 here is going to make a very small difference in the amount of revenues that we're earning. So production is definitely an important part of this our scenario. You also notice that there's a $10 range between this line and this line, and if you just went down to $0 per barrel, there's still a margin of income that doesn't look as though it's accounted for. This is property tax, corporate petroleum tax. There's some other taxes that are built in here. I talked with the Department of Revenue just today, and I think today's tax rate is... It's 4.56%, and even with declining production, we only dropped to 4.44%. So what it's showing is that as we're getting to a lower production, it also begins to stabilize. The tax stays at a very stable level. Production stays at a very stable level, and so it's going to end up kind of plateauing.
What are those property taxes on? What kinds of property are they taxed?
Let me see if I have that written down here. I don't have what it actually says. What they're taxed on.
Maximize what they can get on.
Yeah, but the oil and gas property tax, just for an example, has gone from, you know, in 1981-82 when it was very high, from about 147 million to 47 million. So that tax has dropped off as well, and I'm not sure what the cause of that is.
I guess I'm puzzled with the price of oil went to zero.
Right. Those taxes would just...
Some of those properties would begin to disappear too, wouldn't they?
They would. They would. But what I was trying to show is just that it looks as though it's slightly inflated because the $10 range here is larger than the $10 range here.
Representative Christendom.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What has the oil companies been saying with relation to production? For a while, we're all jumping up and down, no decline after 99. But what are they saying now? I mean, I know there are certain fields that they're thinking about shutting off and didn't turn out to be what they thought it was there. So is production going to continue to move down?
I don't know. I wish I did. Actually, in yesterday's oil and gas audit, I know that ARCO is looking at some development, and they at least stated, you know, claims of trying to expand. I heard this morning that Badami Field is looking at closing either four or six of its wells and just leaving the others. This matrix comes from the Department of Revenue, and they do keep track of each company and each oil source by each field, the number of wells at its production level. And it does take into consideration the ones that are currently open, when they will be closing, or efficiently the rate that they produce right now. If something new comes online, that is not figured into this matrix. So if something new came in, maybe it would come up again.
Did you might just mention the $9, $23 range?
The other fact that it is that if the price per barrel goes above $23, exponentially the increase in revenues would go up. It basically, production levels usually begin to rise then because it's less expensive for them to produce a $23 barrel or more than it is to produce a $20 barrel of oil. The same thing, if we drop below $9, exponentially the price of the earnings will begin to drop.
In other words, it's cheaper to leave it in the ground at $9 a barrel.
I'm sorry, what's that?
It's cheaper to leave it in the ground at $9
yes.
a barrel.
Senator Christo.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me the last time when the Sheffield administration was in control and the barrel dropped down to $9 or less, that the oil production continued on, the flow through the pipe would continue on close to 2 million barrels a day. It super slicked it. That was just kind of interesting. Now it's going the other way. Then we had to try to figure out where they were commingling it later on when the price rose, because we weren't paying any, or we weren't getting any royalty after we got to the trigger, but they kept pumping.
What year was that?
85.
So actually, we dropped significantly. We went from, in the high year, $34.92. In 1986, we hit $22.03.
What was production?
Production. I don't have that on this particular spreadsheet.
I just recall that production remained high.
It did.
Yeah. Maxed it out.
But remember, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, remember that oil didn't fall below the $9 range. What it did was fall a few dollars, but it was still up in the $20
right.
range.
Right.
So that there wasn't the production impact at that time. It was pure price.
Representative Grusendorf, your earlier question about no decline after 99, well, it was a very catchy slogan. It's very temporary. It's a year or two at the most. and the companies now realize that, and I think they've amended their slogan areas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't bother to ask the Department of Revenue another question.
Well, Ginger, before you take that, you might, you can see the production decline because that's a flat price at $20, and obviously if they produce the same amount of oil, the revenue wouldn't be dropping off, so that we're going from roughly a million barrels per day now to less than half a million barrels per day. So there certainly is a decline in the future.
Actually, follow that oil because they were stockpiling it. When the price went up, then they were selling that oil. Millions of dollars.
This graph probably can be best explained by, in your chart, I have a number of bullets that identify each year some of the peaks and some of the valleys that are occurring. The first part talks about revenues, some of the good and bad with the revenue source. And on the last page, it talks about some of our expenditure trends, what have made our expenditures go way up or drop significantly. Obviously, we had a fairly stable incline in some of the earlier years. Oil took off faster than we could spend it right at this point. So we had a surplus of revenue here. That surplus carried forward. In this high spike of expenditure, this is where we sent $1.8 billion to the funding trust.
We had a $1.8 billion capital budget.
No, that's this year. So we had $1.8 billion that went to the permanent fund. It was dispersed over a period of 4 years. So if you show the disbursement schedule, this line might flatten out slightly here. These additional revenues that were above our expenditure line here helped pay for a $1.8 billion capital budget in this year. This dip is the 1986 crash. As you see, I don't think we anticipated that when the budget was planned, so we still spent well. But did decline here. The crash came back up, and so did our spending. We tend to follow the line of, if we have money, we'll continue to spend. But one thing you've noticed is that the line does flatten out. So our expenditure has kind of leveled off at this point. It's a fairly stable line here. It's declined some. Again, in this point, let's see, in 86, we created a statutory budget reserve, helped fill in this gap, and a little of this. In 90, we created the constitutional budget reserve. It paid for part of this gap, and here I think 94 was our first draw from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. This is the 97, just the increased price per barrel of oil. 70 million went back to general funds. And the space in here is what our gap is. So when people say, here's the fiscal gap, it's this white space, and that's what we're trying to fill.
A couple things on this graph. Number one, I think it was good for you to point out that the high spike there was, it's an expenditure, but an expenditure from general fund to a savings account.
Right.
And spending didn't spike up quite as high as it might show. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, the years that our revenues were above the expenditure, coupled with those shifts to savings, mm-hmm. and we constantly hear, you know, the legislature spends every dollar it can get its hands on. But I think when you really look at the facts, setting money aside into the permanent fund, making the extra deposits, years that we had revenue in excess of what we spent, mm-hmm. we've been fairly sensible with what we've done with the money over the years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And then, Representative Grusendorf, I look, when I see these graphs and I look back to the 80s, it just makes me sigh. Those were the days. And the other thing that this points out to me is I think you can see here visually an area of tremendous revenue and expenditure volatility when the Democrats controlled, and relative calm.
Sure, you guys are flatliners.
Representative Davis, did you have
a... Well, I was going to say that it looks to me like the calm began before the recent regime. So.
That's true. Representative Bundy.
Thank you. If I could have some help understanding the note under the graph that general fund program receipts are not counted as general fund expenditures.
Right.
So that isn't a...
What that shows...
Even though we spent money prudently and wisely, and I'd vote for you both, there's really more state spending there than what we're seeing because it doesn't include program receipts.
Well, the spending is accurate. The what happens is that in the Department of Revenue's source book, you'll see numerous taxes and kinds of fees that come in. But what they don't show is they don't have a line that says general fund program receipts. And those are all the individual programs that agencies are providing a service that citizens of Alaska are paying for. And so that's not shown in the revenue line. Probably all of these red bars would go up just slightly.
If it showed program receipts.
Right, to show the program receipts coming in. So they're kind of a net zero, but our expenditures always include them. So that's why there's very small gaps. If you actually look at our budget here, we have two funds. One says federal, one says general fund. The slight difference here is general fund program receipts, where people are actually paying for receipts.
Why it shows we only spend more
than...
Isn't it true that fiscal year 73 probably through 79 that the bulk of the revenues came from the fisheries and probably timber receipts?
You know, I was surprised that there was probably a little bit less of that. In 73, income tax was still pretty strong, and that was individual income tax.
Doing. Representative Grusendorf, I think probably receipts from those things have probably stayed fairly flat.
Yeah.
And gone down seriously the last year.
And there were actually $35 million that were oil revenues in those times too, as they were just beginning to get going. So, Cook Inlet and stuff. So there are some oil revenues in there. Income tax was definitely like the next biggest one on the list here. And then sales and use tax.
Yeah. It doesn't show the Catella fields when Representative Grusendorf was first elected, but they also had a contribution.
Some of it didn't turn into oil yet when I was...
Representative Corey.
Hi, Ginger. You know, I've been in Alaska for 36 years, and of course I don't remember at age 4 back in 1963 when I came up here anything about the budget or the populace. I just know what I've read in the history books over the years, in recent years, as a matter of fact. But I do know that the population of Alaska was right at about 300,000, 350,000 back, you know, 35 years ago or so, and we're at about 600, which represents maybe about a 90% increase or so. But when you look at the amount of monies that we've spent over the years in comparison, you know, we've, 73 to 99, it's just a phenomenal increase. 73, our population was perhaps 400,000. We're at about 6 now, so 30% increase.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only making the point that I think that we as a state here can survive with a lot less spending. And I think as we go through this process of putting the operating budget together, I think it further warrants making major spending cuts to achieve our budget spending goals. And also I might note that, I think I'm going to get a disagreement, but also might note that you know, if you look back at the early years in the 70s before the oil dollar started flowing, or as far back as the 60s when I first came to Alaska, we got along just fine as a, I'm just kind of giving a speech, I guess, but we got along just fine as a society and meeting our needs and meeting the program requirements and so forth to operate as a society and meeting the basic essentials out there. So just an observation that, you know, if you compare it now with then, back then, we got along just fine, and I think now we can get along with a lot less money than what we're spending, despite the deficit.
Representative Davies?
What you don't see on here, because it's a general fund graph, is the federal funds. And so if you were to plot total expenditure per capita, and then you were to adjust it for real dollars, what you'd find is that we're spending less per capita now than we were back there in 75. And so the only difference is that of the dollar that we spend per state resident, a larger proportion of state funds now than federal funds than was then, but the total expenditure is less now than then.
Do you have those numbers, Ginger?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Federal funds?
Yeah. In 1973, just for population, the population was 336,000. In 98, which is the last population number I have, is 621,000 people. And we were asked this in the Senate, and so we did put some inflationary numbers in there and tried to put today's dollars, 1973's dollars, you know, and did the inflationary factor. And what we came up with is that
In FY73, we spent, at today's dollar value, $3.7 million per person. And today we're spending $3.7 million per person in just general funds.
Million?
Million. $3,700,000 per person.
Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that what we looked at?
I'm worth every penny of it.
we hope it's not million. Actually, we do have some graphs that have inflation and population corrections, and we can add the federal funds. And well, I guess what we were looking at was federal funds, and then subtracting federal funds, so you got state funds. Because over time, as Ginger mentioned in '73, there were only two fund sources: GF and federal. And other has grown larger and larger over the years, so that if you just look at the general fund alone, you get a somewhat incomplete picture. And therefore, you're right that total expenditures and total revenues give you the complete picture. We also can do it so that we have a graph of state funds instead of just general funds, and we can provide those to you if you...
I'd be interested.
Representative Bundy?
Brings up an interesting point. It wouldn't be a lot of work. It'd be interesting to see a graph, something like that, that broke out program receipts, federal funds, GF, and then other, and if there are big categories of other, if you could put those in separate categories, it'd be just interesting to see how those lines would play out. Just don't let it out of the state, because if the lower 48 finds out we get seven federal dollars for every one we spend in taxes, we're in trouble.
They already know that.
John, I told you not to take
places. In the expenditure, is the appropriation for the dividend, appropriation for the dividend is not in there, in your expenditure?
No. This is only general funds, so the dividend, any permanent fund money is not included in this.
Neither is inflation proofing.
Ginger, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ginger, when you provide the further information here as far as the federal comparisons between then and now, if you could factor in the program receipts too, so we can see, you know, how it compares then to now.
To include general fund program receipts in our total revenue stream, or just do a separate program receipt?
Either. I'd prefer separate, but either would be fine. But I'd be curious to see, you know, what the differences between then and now as far as program receipts would be too, because I know we're spending about, I think, around $2 billion a year. It'd be nice to see how that compares with, say, 20 years ago or whatever.
Okay. Certainly, you're able to look at any of this statistical information or these graphs, and somebody might look at that graph and say, it's obvious that when we started offering a dividend, we started attracting a populace that demanded much more service from the government, and therefore spending went up.
One other thing I was going to say about the general fund program receipts, we didn't actually technically have that fund until FY88. We had other funds that were called like user fees. We had a number of other funds that are not called GF program receipts and were never included as part of GF. They were always included in the other fund group. And so a real accurate portrayal of GF program receipts wouldn't begin until FY88. But if we just do the all state funds and take out just federal, you'll get a feel for all of the fund sources that come in. So,
Representative Moses and then Bundy.
I'm not suggesting we cut to that level, but the first year I was in the legislature, the general fund budget was $79 million.
Representative Bundy?
He does have a way of making us feel bad.
or young.
In the expenditures, does that include money paid out as permanent fund dividends?
No. These are...
But those are state expenditures.
Permanent fund dividends are actually permanent fund corporate receipts, and those are not included in the general fund category. So those would be another one of our other fund categories.
But the permanent fund dividend is a state expenditure.
It is a state expenditure.
And perhaps if we're going to talk about expenditures, we have to put that in there.
Right, but...
Folks want to cut state expenditures, right. We want to tell them how much... What state expenditures include. Yes.
The fund group that's included in this GF expenditure is general fund receipts, general fund match, general fund program receipts, general fund mental health, tobacco receipts, the Pioneer's Home receipts, motor fuel, the motor fuel tax increase that had been proposed for this year. And I think those, I think that's all of the general fund items that are included in this expenditure line. But like I said, we do have a number of other state funds that are not included as part of our general fund spending.
Just to add on it, Representative Martin, wherever you are, he asked me to carry on and we talk about the complete budget. And I think it's only fair that we add then the expenditure of the permanent fund dividend as part of the complete budget.
Certainly.
Representative Davies?
The revenue is part of the complete revenue.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I didn't say that we should
exclude
that. That is smoke and mirrors.
Representative Osterman, did you have a question?
No.
All right. Thank you, Ginger. Go right ahead.
Anyway, that was all I was going to share.
Oh, okay.
Does that help us? Have you solved our problem?
I don't know if I can solve it. That's up to you.
Mr. Chairman, you'll probably miss that when Representative Coring said that he could do with less, and we did with less as soon as he got out of the hot lunch program.
Dave, you know, one of the conclusions that I reached when reading this is that observations. Number one, oil revenue is not stable. I think that's an intuitive thing, but once stated, it amplifies a point that we live with in trying to concoct a budget each year.
Carefully craft.
That's a good point, Representative Bundy. How do you reduce the uncertainty?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure you do. Oil is a commodity. Commodities fluctuate, you're stuck with it. I mean, the reality is you do not control oil prices. You have very little input over production. You essentially take the revenue stream that you have. And this whole discussion was of revenue stability. And really what you as a legislature are looking at is not revenue stability as much as it is expenditure stability. And you're doing that. You do that through the rainy day fund, the statutory budget reserve, the CBR, the permanent fund, any other time that you spend less than every nickel that's available. So that I think that everyone over the past 25 years has understood that it's just like any individual. You essentially have a working life here, and the oil bonanza is over. You had a 25-year history of high earnings and high spending, and now it's time to retire. I guess the oil bonanza is over, and it's like a person retiring, because the cash flow is no longer there, and the question is, what do you replace it with?
Weather and war.
Your pension fund.
Well, but your
weather
pension
and war
fund
will do it.
If you want to think of it this way, and this first graph. This bottom line is your pension fund. Because that's your stable cash flow.
You've left out a major source of revenue there, which is the revenue from the permanent fund.
Well, the revenue from the permanent fund, I would say, is not your pension fund. That's your 401k plan.
Mm-hmm. It's about the same thing, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Well, and it is, except that this is something that continues. It's not your savings account. It's a continued source of income, of revenue. Whereas your permanent fund earnings is something that you saved up, and certainly the earnings from that can be considered a new source of revenue, because if you save and it generates income, in the long run you get to spend more than you would have if you'd spent it as you got it, because you now have earnings added to your income stream. But you're not going to stabilize this, and I think what you see here, Ginger was drawing the trend line, showing the trend line.
You can see that if you do a line along the peaks, along the valleys, what happens in that range is volatility, just price fluctuation. But you can also see that the trend line is down. You can also see that if you follow that trend line, it puts you where you don't want to be, because it goes very negative. And I don't think we're going to follow that trend line. The question is, in the future, we know how to reduce volatility. You cut off the peaks and you fill in the valleys. You've done that. And now you have to look at it as this whole 25-year period is one big peak. Now you're entering a valley. Did you save, did you chop enough off of this peak to fill that valley?
And the permanent fund, yes.
The permanent fund did that. The permanent fund income generates something on the order of, you know, a couple billion. Your entire budget can be funded with the permanent fund. So, yes, the legislature has been, I think, responsible and has a retirement plan that can sustain it forever. But you also have competition for that. Permanent fund dividend program takes away that earnings flow from the general fund. And, you know, that I don't want to make a political statement here. It's just a mathematical statement that the permanent fund can be used and probably is the only source that can fill this gap.
Because I have my peak.
Sure. But.
Thank you very much, David. I mean, you very adequately summarized a feeling that I have had for quite a while. Representative Davis?
You know, there's a lot of questions that have come up, and I think there'd be a lot more answers if Representative Foster was here.
More colorful answers, let's put it that way. Are there any further questions for Ginger or Dave? We really appreciate you taking the time to present this, Ginger. Like I said, while you may have stated the obvious, at the same time, sometimes we can't see the forest for the trees, and we need to state that to get a better handle on where we're at. So with that, next Monday we have the HB 27 graduate student loans scheduled, as well as the Y2K appropriation bill, House Bill 64 will be heard. Hopefully, as soon as we can get a work draft completed of 64, we'll get it around to the offices so you have time before the meeting on Monday to get a chance to review that and have any questions put forth that you need to have answered. Representative Davies.
Mr. Chair, on that issue, I looked through just the list of expenditure items. Do we have any place, just a quick thumbnail summary of what each of those expenditures covers? You know, some of these are fairly large chunks of change. Is there any kind of a...
The operative term there is thumbnail. I've got a very thick thumb, and that's about how thick the detail and backup is, which amplifies why it's taken us longer than I anticipated to get through and try and reasonably deduce what is necessary or what we could move or shift or may not be necessary. I think we've made available to everyone, haven't we, Denny?
Is that in this packet?
That packet.
I haven't looked through this yet.
Fairly sizable packet, which gives you fairly detailed analysis. I will say, however, Representative Davies, that while Commissioner Poe has been fairly complete in asking and determining what they feel are necessary expenditures, the detail that they went through in terms of looking for alternative funding sources or options was not as complete. And that's really what we have been going through. Okay, are there any further questions? With that, we are adjourned until 1:30 on Monday. Thanks.